Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. Throughout this series, created in partnership with Coutts, I will be speaking to senior experts, thought leaders, and influencers from the worlds of travel, architecture, investment, consumer goods, and more, as we examine how we can embed purpose and sustainability into our everyday lives. From responsible investment to electric vehicles to eco-conservation, we'll explore the new technology, partnerships, and initiatives helping us all to lead cleaner and greener lives. My guest today is Ruth Nick E., Executive Director of Purchasing, Commercial, Government Affairs, and Legal at luxury supercar company McLaren Automotive. Ruth joined McLaren Group in 2009 as a legal advisor, rising through the ranks to become an executive director in 2014. She plays a pivotal role in strategic and commercial affairs across McLaren Automotive, as well as managing all government engagement and corporate governance for the brand across the globe. Ruth is a member of the executive board, shaping and influencing the future strategy of McLaren Automotive, including their commitment to using groundbreaking innovation to achieve a minimal environmental footprint and maximum social impact. She also sits on the board of directors, acting as company secretary. Welcome, Ruth.
Hello, Paul, and thank you very much for having me.
We're delighted to have you. So let me kick off by saying, earlier this year, the UK government proposed to move the ban on selling new petrol, diesel, or hybrid cars forward from 2040 to 2035. How has the automotive industry responded to this decision, and how is McLaren setting out a vision to transition towards electric vehicles?
So as a broad industry, the automotive industry is fully committed to the Road to Zero plan and has already invested very heavily in the technologies that will enable this. The reaction of the industry as a whole to the 2035 timeframe has been to accept that it's the right thing to do and to acknowledge that that timeframe is achievable, but not without support in bringing the technologies and the industry itself forward. I guess it's worth just taking two elements of the broader automotive industry into account when we talk about the challenges that we face in getting to the 2035 target. As I've said, it's completely achievable from a technology and development perspective, but there are two factors that have to be taken into consideration and will need some supports and adjustment either via government or through the markets itself in order to achieve the targets. The first is for the majority of the high volume automotive manufacturers, they've really quite long development cycles and long product life cycles. So in the automotive industry, the general approach to development is to take a platform approach. So you'll develop pieces of technology that will apply for potentially 15, 20, 30 years of your product life cycle. So you make a big upfront investment and you will gain and achieve returns on that investment in the very longer time frame. The reality is that the majority of the high volume OEMs have actually already begun and are fully technically and financially committed to those platforms that will be in existence in 2035. So the bringing forward of the Road to Zero timeframe is going to impact the investment profiles and product lifecycle profiles that have existed prior to this new target coming into play. And there will need to be some form of assistance given either through incentivization to drive market demand or support in terms of future investments being made within the automotive industry itself and its product development. From a McLaren perspective, I think we are excited by the challenge of what the Road to Zero brings. And it's worth pointing out that while the larger volume OEMs have particular challenges, McLaren's challenges will be really quite different. One of the themes I'm sure will come out as we talk during this conversation is that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to either electrification, Road to Zero, vehicle development. And the automotive industry is actually really quite a diverse industry. Many people, I think, just view it as, you know, an industry that makes cars, but we make cars, vans, trucks, supercars, city cars, SUVs. There's a multitude of products that come out of our industry. So the effects that the Road to Zero and other challenges have on McLaren are very different to those of our larger OEM colleagues. From our perspective, we're a smaller company, relatively speaking, and being that smaller company actually brings some advantages. It allows us to operate in a very agile way because of the volumes of cars that we produce and also the market that we sell into. A market that expects high innovation, expects to be at the cutting edge of technology, we're able to take more risks in terms of driving new technologies and innovation into the market. So we're fully up for the challenge of hitting Road to Zero by 2035. The biggest challenge as we see it is not around development cycles or product life cycles, because ours are shorter than our larger OEM colleagues. The challenge for us at the moment is that the technology just isn't there to deliver a McLaren that our market wants in full EV. So at the moment, the battery technology which is available and the battery technology which is also forecasted to be available between now and 2035 isn't appropriate for a McLaren car. Our cars are made to be fast, they're made to be agile, they're made to be lightweight, and batteries are heavy things at the moment. Batteries also are very much focused on range, which is completely what you would expect for modes of transport to get people from A to B. But in the context of a McLaren car, there's an element of performance that requires, and that power within the battery itself just isn't available on the market at the moment. So the challenge from McLaren's perspective and our vision of how we transition towards electric vehicles is really to push the boundaries of technology in terms of those batteries to make sure that they meet the power requirements as well as the range requirements of our customers. But we also take a very holistic approach to electrification. And in our mind, you cannot just look at the powertrain in the context of moving towards electric vehicles. You need to look at the vehicle as a whole. And if batteries are going to become really quite heavier within that powertrain structure, we need to make sure that the cars become lighter. So we're also very focused on delivering lighter cars within our product portfolio so we can surprise and delight the customers, which is our ultimate aim as a company.
It seems to me that you therefore potentially have a really interesting role to play. If you could be on the cutting edge of delivering batteries which have higher performance and lower weights, two things that are, you know, specific to McLaren's requirements, that could be of enormous value to the industry as a whole.
It absolutely can be, Paul, and I think the elements of McLaren that honestly really excites me on a personal level. And I think it's one of those things, again, that's missed if you just look at an organisation like ours on a superficial level. So we produce sports cars. We are, you know, a low volume manufacturer. And often we get the question about, you know, why are you relevant in the context of higher volume OEMs who are driving massive numbers of cars into markets where everybody has access to these cars, where McLarens are a little bit more niche. And the reality is, our products are really the manifestation of what we're really all about. Yes, they drive, as I said, that kind of surprise and delight for our customers. Yes, they are the thing that ultimately excites our own staff and our fans and our customers to the brand. But if you scratch beneath the surface of the products themselves, you have this highly innovative, highly technology-focused company that is really pushing the boundaries of what's possible. And that is why companies like ours are really important in the context, not just of the automotive industry, but actually industry as a whole. We are the incubators of innovation. So we are, a company and have a product that allows us to develop new technologies, but not just in isolation, not just in the context of kind of R&D within a lab. We have the route to market. We're able to develop those technologies quite quickly. We're also able to then industrialize the technologies and bring them to market, as I said, like that incubator, try them out, show people that these technologies works, and then ultimately allow those technologies to be scaled up in the mass market and the larger OEMs.
So what do you think needs to change in order for electric vehicles to be the norm, indeed commonplace, on our roads?
I think there are two major elements to what needs to change. And one, but both are complicated, but one is probably easier to explain than the other. The first one is consumer confidence. And I think there is a lack of consumer understanding of what an EV vehicle actually means. And some of that is because the technology, while mature to a certain extent, certainly hasn't reached its high levels of super maturity yet. So we need to get confidence into that consumer market so people understand that electric vehicles will work for them, will get them from A to B. Some of that will be through driving incentives to incentivize people to get into cars, but some of it will actually just be about tackling the perception that people have around range anxiety or the cars not being able to deliver what their combustion engine car currently delivers. So there's definitely a lot of work that the industry and governments have to do around that consumer confidence piece to entice people into electric vehicles. I think, secondly, I think there's a technology approach and a technology change that's required. And one of those changes really relates, in my mind, around us talking about electric vehicles all the time. So from our perspective at McLaren, we would advocate a technology neutral approach being taken to the road to zero and the decarbonisation of the automotive industry. What our logic behind that is that while batteries are the known technology at the moment, and I think across the industry are the favoured approach to how we achieve the road to zero, there are other technologies out there. They may not be as mature and might require a lot more thought than electrification currently does, but these other technologies need to be given the support and the opportunity to be developed rather than just driving forward with batteries and electrification only. So from our perspective, we see one of the fundamental changes required as being a technology neutral approach being taken, which allows and supports then the development and research and innovation to happen within areas around hydrogen, around synthetic fuels, and frankly, around the technologies that we don't even know yet. So we're all focused on batteries. We know about those. I'm sure there are things out there that we just haven't considered yet. And the industry needs to be encouraged and enabled to continue to investigate those alternative ways of achieving decarbonisation. Another change that needs to happen is very much a cross-sectoral approach being taken to decarbonisation. So currently there is a lot of focus on the auto industry in terms of how we achieve the road to zero, how we progress batteries for automotive cars, et cetera, et cetera. And the reality is that these challenges face other industries as well. So if we can work cross-sectorally and if we can have policy decisions that are made cross-sectorally rather than in isolation, I think, again, we can really drive that innovation and technology leadership forward, which will benefit not just the auto industry, but other industry partners as well. And then from our perspective, and finally on this, one of the, it's not so much a change, but I think it's a continued emphasis on being brave around innovation. So from our perspective, we would like to see our industry, we would like to see governments supporting the chasing of innovation, not following what's already happening, but keeping on driving forward to try and find the next best thing. And that will involve support continuing to be given to R&D channels, to startup companies, to actually the very, very good and very industrially focused academic institutions that we have, to drive more partnership from R&D right the way through to development, industrialization, and bringing something to market. And then focus also on skills and training, in particular within the UK, obviously, where we're based, to make sure that we have the expertise and have the people who are able to, you know, to be brave and to reap the benefits of those changes.
So a new generation of consumer, in almost every one of their choices, is beginning to attach real priority to sustainability and to environmental impact. But I think it's very hard to make decisions in the absence of good information and where new technologies and new markets and new innovations are in the process of formation. So what do you think are the best ways for an individual to make a kind of green choice when they're buying a car?
My answer to that is it is twofold. One, and step number one for me would be to suggest that people look beyond the powertrain only. So look beyond whether it's a combustion engine, a hybrid car, or a fully EV car, and take the car as a whole. So take a look to see what materials are being used in the whole car, understand the weight of the car, understand the performance of the car beyond what comes out of the powertrain, and really take the whole product into consideration when making the decision about whether whether a choice is greener or not. From my perspective as well, I think the second thing that I would suggest people take into consideration is where the car has come from. And I don't mean that in a geographical sense, but I mean looking at the supply chain, looking at the innovation that has gone into the car to understand whether it is driving change. So something I'm really, really passionate about is the ability of companies like McLaren to drive innovation forward and drive technology forward. Those innovative technologies get adopted by other companies, and customers understanding what they're buying, the work that's gone into it, and the change that has been driven by the technologies that they're acquiring in their product, I think can really allow people to make those proper green and sustainable choices. But looking beyond just the powertrain in the car that's in front of them, looking at the whole car, and frankly, looking at the whole business behind the car would be a really, I think, really help people in making that broad decision.
I want to talk about your social impact work for a moment. And I know that in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, McLaren pivoted really fast to make ventilators in order to support hospitals in need. Tell us a little bit about that, but also how much of that sort of work will be baked into the future and the brand ethos of McLaren?
Our work in the Ventilator Challenge UK is probably one of the things I am most proudest of in all of my time at McLaren. And I think to me, our involvement in that really helps describe what McLaren as an organisation is all about and what we do. Just for those that aren't aware of what the consortium was about, is that at the beginning of the COVID-19 crisis in the UK, the government recognised that there weren't sufficient numbers of ventilators available within the NHS to support the potential need that was going to arise as a result of COVID-19. So put out an appeal to industry to help and to help manufacture, scale up, redesign ventilators. McLaren became very, very heavily involved in the Ventilator Challenge UK consortium, which took a two-pronged and very successful approach to this, whereby we scaled up operations effectively in weeks within an existing ventilator company so that they could meet the demands required from government. It was a really significant scale up and very much focused on all of our expertise in design of product, manufacturing engineering and rapid development and rapid response to problem solving. For McLaren, that is just what we do. And the approach that we took to tackling the challenges of the Ventilator Challenge UK were pretty much every day for us, albeit that the product popping out at the end was a very different product and was going to be used in a very different way to our normal cars. We're a company that drives change. We're a company that isn't afraid of trying something, getting it wrong, fixing it and trying again. The key, we believe, is to fail fast and to change quickly so that you can make those quick decisions, respond in a very agile way and ultimately deliver a positive result. So in terms of whether we'll be looking to build that type of approach into our brand in the future, I honestly believe we don't need to because it already existed within the brand and that's who we are as individuals.
So speaking about pushing the boundaries of technology, earlier this year there were reports that McLaren is developing a car running on synthetic fuel as an alternative to battery electric vehicles. Can you tell us a little bit more about this technology and its applications and benefits?
So, as I said earlier, one of the, I guess, very important changes that we need to make in terms of our approach to the road to zero is to take a technology neutral approach. So while electrification is certainly the front runner in terms of how we decarbonize the auto industry, it cannot be the only solution. And from a personal perspective, I think it would be really quite short-sighted of us as an industry to just pursue that one solution without exploring others. So from our perspective, we are looking at alternative solutions, one of those being synthetic fuels. Now, whether or not synthetic fuels ever gets to the point in the timeframes that we require to actually be usable and achieve the targets that we've set in terms of the product we want to deliver, I don't know. But synthetic fuels, if they did work, would actually allow us to, as not just McLaren, but as an industry, to retain combustion engines and allow them to remain relevant while still achieving decarbonisation. That could have quite a positive impact for customers, in that there wouldn't be a need to run out cars and have a fast turnover of cars to get to electric vehicles. But also in terms of the industry itself, it could extend fleet lifetimes. It would also potentially, I won't say save development cost, but it will allow investments in development of new technology to be shifted elsewhere, because there wouldn't need to be a focus in stripping out combustion engines. The reality is, though, Paul, this is a technology in its infancy. Whether it works or not, who knows? But from our perspective, it's definitely one of those exciting opportunities that has to be explored as we look to driving the decarbonisation agenda through the industry. The bits that I'm most excited about, though, are those technologies, as I said, that we don't know about yet. And that's the freedom of thought that we all need to engage ourselves in every once in a while, so that we can really, you know, think creatively about what solutions are out there.
I mean, the more I read about McLaren, the more it became immediately apparent that you are an innovation company wrapped in a car company rather than the other way around, at least from my perspective. And I was fascinated to read about your Composites Technology Center, which focuses on the development of new materials and other types of design innovation. So what new materials are you cooking up, and what are the ones that you're most excited about?
So I'll just correct you on one thing there. I think we're both an innovation company and a car company. Our product is what really drives the excitement through our organization, and I think through our customer base. So what we produce from a car perspective is really, really special, really, really unique, and is something that is inherent in our brand, but also in our mission as a company. But you're absolutely right in identifying that hand in hand with that product that we produce, we are a technology company. And it's not just about pumping cars out in the market. It's about pumping cutting edge, technology-led, innovative cars out onto the market. That's what makes it all special. And I think that's what makes our employees all get out of bed in the morning to, I was going to say, go into work, but log on some of them from their laptops to really think about what changes we can drive through the industry. In terms of the Composites Technology Centre in Sheffield, this was a project that I've been involved in from its inception. And again, I think this is something that just demonstrates the strength of McLaren as an innovator, but frankly, the strength of the UK as a hotbed of new technologies, and is a business model that we should consider as a country pursuing in other areas of innovation. So our work in Sheffield is all about driving lightweight into our cars. And in the context of electrification, we believe that is supremely important, because batteries are heavy things. Batteries make cars heavier. Everybody will know, not just from the motorsport context, but everybody will know that if something is heavier, it's generally less efficient. So as those batteries and cars get heavier, the solution to making them more efficient is to actually try and make them lighter. And that doesn't just apply to the battery, that applies to the entire vehicle. So the work that we're doing within the Composite Centre is looking to explore different ways of manufacturing and also developing and innovating those advanced materials. And our focus there at the moment is around carbon fibre. For us at McLaren, carbon fibre has been a fundamental piece of technology and material since 1981, when we first produced the first ever carbon fibre chassis in our Formula One teams. And since then, we have never produced a car without carbon fibre at the heart of it. And Sheffield for us is just the next step in terms of our relationship with carbon fibre, but with also composite materials that are going to drive that lightweighting philosophy through our own business, but also we hope through the wider industry. In terms of the next stages, we have just announced publicly that the carbon fibre chassis using our new technologies coming from Sheffield will be launched in a new vehicle in 2021. So that factory is now up and running, and we're embarking on the next phase of what we want to deliver within the Composites Technology Centre. And the exciting bit for me in terms of what we're doing at the Composites Technology Centre is not just about what we're doing for ourselves, but the transferability of that technology into other industries. So this concept of lightweighting and the use of advanced materials and new manufacturing processes are equally as relevant and as significant in terms of the positive impact they could have to other industries like aerospace, aviation, medical devices. And we are based within Sheffield quite deliberately, because of the relationship it allowed us to have with the University of Sheffield, with the AMRC, who also work in that cross-sectoral way and have given us the access to talk to other industries, to share ideas with other industries, but really allow us as a company not just to focus on delivering technologies into the auto industry and allowing the scale up of those technologies within the auto industry, but also looking beyond automotive to make sure that those technologies are applied elsewhere where they're relevant.
I think anybody who follows particularly racing in the motor industry always has this image of Formula One being at the pinnacle of it. But Formula E has emerged as the world's electric-only motor racing championship. And I wonder what impact you think that has had on the industry as a whole.
I think Formula E has had a massively, massively significant impact by normalizing electric vehicles for the public. And as I said earlier, I think one of the biggest challenges that we are faced with is the consumer perception of electric vehicles and their perception of how an electric vehicle could be relevant in their lives. The fact that the Formula E series has been able to demonstrate how high-tech, how powerful and how relevant electric vehicles are in the context of motor racing, that the impact of that on people's perception and the normalisation of decarbonised race cars can't be underestimated. And from my perspective, I think that's a really, really significant contribution that's been made. In terms of, I guess, Formula One and Formula E as hotbeds of innovation, the Formula E has actually used some technology which has come from automotive in the batteries, which is quite interesting because normally Formula One is the kind of conception of an idea. It allows an idea to be, and it is the incubator to a certain extent of new R&D. Companies like ourselves then at McLaren Automotive will allow that idea to be industrialized on a high-tech, low-volume level, and then the next stage being the scale-up into large OEMs. Formula E has almost happened in parallel to the development of electrification within the broader market. So for me, it's really that normalization of EV and being able to have EV cars performing at the top end of motorsport is just hugely significant.
In your kind of future casting, how important do you think autonomous vehicles are for the future of mobility? What steps do you think we can take to ensure that they are both safe and effective?
So I'll answer that on behalf of McLaren's context before I talk about the broader industry context. And I think autonomous vehicles present, again, a unique challenge to McLaren versus the challenge that it presents to the higher volume OEMs. Nobody buys a McLaren not to drive it. So autonomy in the context of a driver not needing to drive the car is kind of the opposite of what McLaren is all about and the opposite of why our customers buy a McLaren vehicle. Our customers buy a McLaren vehicle to experience the drive, to hear the noise, to feel the acceleration. It's a very emotional purchase that a customer makes. So autonomy for us is, you could either say, is a big challenge, or in true McLaren fashion, we see it as a huge opportunity. Our view is that autonomy will become, and I hate the phrase, but it will become almost a hygiene factor in terms of people's expectation of vehicles. If we look at what is being predicted in terms of where regulations could potentially go, it may be that in the near future, you won't be able to drive a car within a city unless it's an autonomous vehicle. But so from our customers' perspective, we will need to have a level of autonomy that will allow them to use their cars, because one of the things that McLarens are very famous for within our customer base is that while they are a high performance car, they are an extraordinarily drivable car. You can just as easily take a McLaren around Silverstone as you can drive it to Tesco to pick up your shopping. They're very, very drivable cars. So we will need to have that functionality, much like you need to have a sat nav and you need to have a radio in the car. That autonomous driving functionality will need to be present in the vehicle. From our perspective, though, we're also looking at how that autonomous functionality can be used to enhance the driving experience. So we're looking to understand whether the technologies that will be used in autonomous driving can be adapted to help, for example, with driver guides and help people learn how to drive cars better. So it almost becomes your in-vehicle instructor rather than the driver of the car. And there's a huge amount of thought and activity in our development sphere in terms of how we take that approach to autonomy in a way that enhances the driving experience for our customers. In the context of the wider auto industry, I think autonomous vehicles are another technology leap, very much akin to decarbonisation, which will see a fundamental change in how people engage with vehicles. One of the elements that is quite exciting, I think, is the word I'd use around it, is the concept that we have at the moment of connected car. While autonomy feels like it's very far away to some people, and I think a lot of average normal kind of customer drivers feel like autonomous driving is quite a while away. When we look at how connected cars are at the moment, when we look at the amount of data that can come off a car because of the software and systems that are embedded in those cars just through normal process now, we're actually probably not that far off. But much like decarbonisation and electrification, it's likely to be the regulation and the infrastructure supports that will slow the progress of the adoption of autonomous vehicles rather than the actual autonomous vehicles themselves.
So earlier this year, you teamed up with Blue Peter for the Supercar of the Year competition. And I'd love to know more about the goals behind that partnership and, in particular, what you think the importance of education is in inspiring young people, and particularly young women, to pursue engineering and other STEM subjects.
This is something that we at McLaren are very, very passionate about, but passionate about for somewhat selfish reasons, in that the majority of our supply base are based in the UK. We have our manufacturing facilities based in the UK with the Composites Technology Centre in Yorkshire, and then our manufacturing centre, the McLaren Production Centre in Woking in Surrey. So we are a very UK-centric organisation. And in order for us to remain, which is our goal and ambition, that UK-focused organisation, we need to have the skills. We need to have the expertise and the skills and the people available to us to actually drive our business forward in the locations where we're based. In terms of our approach to STEM, I think we are able to make a big difference in making initial strides in that our product is so exciting. It is so very easy to drive a McLaren car into a primary, secondary or third level educational institution and really get people excited about what it's all about. Getting them excited and understanding that the car is, you know, designed, developed and manufactured in the UK brings things to a completely different level in terms of their understanding of why this exciting product is relevant to them. And one of the things that we're very actively exploring within McLaren is how we engage not just with children in the context of STEM, but actually with the parents, and getting the knowledge across that there is a very, very viable and very strong career path available for people within automotive, but also within the broader technology and science industries within the UK. And I think that's a narrative that needs to be explored further and exploited further, allowing people to understand that, you know, but working in a company at McLaren, you can actually start at a primary school and work your way right the way through within your home time, if you're located in Woking or Sheffield, and ultimately end up designing, developing, manufacturing these supercars, 90% of which are exported around the world without going abroad. Everything is there for you. But getting people to understand that the career path exists, I think, is very, very important, not just in the context of the children, but actually in the context of their parents. In terms of your question of about attracting women into the industry, I think that, me doing something like this helps. People seeing that women do form a very central part to the success of the automotive industry within the UK is very important. And, you know, there is that saying that if you can't see, you can't be. So I think that's quite an important and, frankly, quite a simple thing for us to do. But really, in the context of our organisation, we can change the perception that people have and that women and young girls have about what it's like to work in the automotive industry or in a manufacturing environment. By allowing people to see what our factory looks like. It's not your stereotypical factory. It's a very, very clean. People compare it to an operating theatre in a hospital. So getting people to understand and change their perception about what working in a technology and a manufacturing environment in 2020 in the UK is actually all about is really, really important. But from my personal perspective, I think it's starting very young. It's talking to children, not just from a gender perspective, but also from a broader diversity perspective. It's talking to them all to get them excited, but to show that there is a very, very clear career path and that, you know, pursuing an engineering or STEM activity will actually bring you to a successful outcome when you're older is extraordinarily important. And very lastly on this, I think not to be underestimated in terms of its importance is also getting people to understand that there's a huge amount of roles in the STEM industries that don't necessarily require you to be an engineer. I'm not an engineer, yet I have a voice and make decisions around what our technology roadmaps are, what our product plans are, get involved in setting our strategies long term. You don't have to be an engineer in order to make a very valid and very valuable contribution to the industry.
Well, it's extraordinarily evident from this conversation alone that you are making a very valid and extraordinary contribution to the industry. So I always like to end by asking people about kind of personal decisions we can make in our everyday lives, because sometimes policy and the transition to more sustainability can feel rather abstract or inaccessible. And so I wanted to ask, what steps can people make in their own transport choices to support meaningful, positive change in this industry?
I would say embrace the change. And that's a very simple statement to make, but it's quite a complicated thing. But if people recognise that what we are embarking on in terms of driving towards decarbonisation, looking to improve the approach to sustainability, it's all about change. And I think if any of us have learned anything over the last 5 months, it's that change can happen very rapidly if it has to. And very often, if we look at what's just happened in the last 5 months in terms of remote working, I mean, we literally went from a McLaren perspective as an organisation from all being on site to all working remotely overnight. And had you tried to do that without the need for the change, we probably would have taken us 10 years to get our heads around around doing that. But we were able to make it work. So I think if people really want to embrace a more sustainable approach in the context of transport and automotive, but even beyond, you just have to embrace that change and be brave and bold in those decisions you make. Because if people embrace change and support those innovators who are driving the change, then it's just going to happen quicker.
Ruth, thank you so much for this conversation. It's extraordinary to hear with such clarity and with such articulacy a positive vision for an industry that is vital to all of our lives, that both inspires us and which is essential to human existence and to urban existence. So thank you for your insights and for your contribution today.
You're welcome, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on Coutts and their recommendations for a sustainable lifestyle, please visit coutts.com/conduit conversations. And for more information on The Conduit and our community of change makers, please visit theconduit.com.